This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Noelle Lim. Net neutrality and the banning of Huawei have been hot news in the US. In the center of this firestorm is Ajit Pai, the chairman of the Federal Communications Commission, or the FCC. Ajit, welcome to Malaysia. Let's start with net neutrality, where internet service providers such as Comcast must provide access to all websites at equal speed. Why are you against net neutrality?
Well, I am in favor of a free and open internet. A free and open internet is what we had prior to 2015 when these regulations were imposed. And it is what we have today, 2 years after we made our decision to remove those heavy-handed regulations. And as a result of our decision, we've seen tremendous changes, improvements in the internet in the United States. For example, since December 14th of 2017, average internet speeds at home for American consumers have gone up over 60%. Infrastructure investment in the United States in broadband was up $3 billion in 2018, the second consecutive increase. Venture capital spending on startups was set a record in 2018, and more Americans got access to the internet than ever before. And so our thinking is that a market-based framework is the best way to give companies, big and small, a strong incentive to invest in internet infrastructure, and consumers ultimately benefit from that decision. That market-based framework is something that I think is very important for companies to be able to have certainty to invest.
Why do you need to remove net neutrality in order to have a market-based framework?
Well, the problem is that the law as currently constructed requires classification of all broadband internet access under what is called Title II. These are those 1930s rules. And so the argument I've made is for Congress to update the law. It's been 85 years since they set Title II into law. I would certainly favor Congress saying we don't want blocking of lawful content. We don't want throttling of lawful content. We don't want to see any competitive paid prioritization. We want every internet service provider to be transparent. I've just described to you in 15 seconds a law that should pass 99-1. And I think that part of the problem is that this has become much more of a political issue. So I certainly favor a free and open internet. What I don't favor is the imposition of these 1930s regulations, because that ultimately will just dissuade investment. And that's not what we want to see in this marketplace.
Why don't you just say, we reduce the regulatory burden, we remove all that paperwork, as long as you keep the net neutral. Don't touch net neutrality, leave it as what it is. And reduce the regulatory burden.
Well, even the net neutrality advocates in the United States didn't want that. They specifically wanted these 1930s regulations. And that, I think, gives away the game, as we say in the United States, is that they wanted all of these heavy-handed regulations to apply. They wanted all the paperwork. They want all of the price regulation and that sort of thing. And that's one of the reasons why I think Congress would do well to update the law, simply to recognize that, look, we're in the 21st century. Let's put on the page some basic principles of an open internet, and then we can move ahead. I mean, honestly, nobody in the United States, I don't think, could credibly claim that a lot of the predictions that were made 2 years ago about this issue have come true. You aren't paying $2 per tweet. Searches haven't been slowed down. People aren't getting blocked from access to lawful content. In fact, if anything, I would argue that the scrutiny is now being placed on some of the big tech giants in the United States that have completely escaped scrutiny, or at least they were 2 years ago when this topic was a big one in the United States.
Why would internet providers invest more when there's no net neutrality? Is it because they can charge more now?
Well, I think now they sense that there is a more market-based framework, and they can use the certainty around that framework to build a business case for deployment, because they know that there's more likely to be a return on the investment. I mean, we've heard from all kinds of small companies that will never make the news, have had trouble raising funds from local banks in order to build broadband infrastructure. And those banks have said, why should we invest in your business plan? We heard from a company called Aristotle in Little Rock, Arkansas. And the owner of this company, she personally told the FCC, we had trouble raising funds from a bank because the bank said, even though we understand you have a business plan for Little Rock, just outside of Little Rock, we don't see that much return on the investment. And if the FCC has all of these heavy-handed regulations, what is the return on the investment going to be? We're not going to loan money to you. And so she held back on extending her broadband network outside of Little Rock. And that's a very good example that will never, again, make the front page of the Times. People want to focus on the big companies like Comcast and AT&T, but it's the smaller companies that are the ones that have much more trouble raising capital and complying with the regulatory burden.
Small content providers may be disadvantaged if they are not able to pay for faster delivery services to some of your ISPs. What's your response to that? That has been one major criticism of not having net neutrality.
So two different points I would make in response to that. The first one is that's entirely hypothetical. That had never happened before in the internet economy, and it has not happened in the last 2 years since we repealed these regulations.
So what protection would you provide customers then?
So both with respect to transparency, the FCC adopted in 2017 a transparency rule that requires internet service providers to disclose all kinds of business practices, including whether they are charging certain companies like that a fee for prioritization. And in addition to that, the Federal Trade Commission is now empowered to take action against any company that behaves anti-competitively. So let's say there's an internet service provider with an affiliated content provider. If they discriminate against an unaffiliated content provider, that is something that the Federal Trade Commission can look at. Under Section 5 of the Federal Trade Commission Act, they have authority to go after any unfair method of competition or any unfair or deceptive trade practice against any player in the internet economy. And the second point I would make to people who express that concern is the major problem they face is not from the internet service providers. It's from some of the Silicon Valley companies that are actually exercising some content market power in this area. Google and Facebook, for example, have over almost 100% of the digital advertising growth in 2018. Those are the companies that I think a lot of startups are much more concerned about now than, you know, internet service providers.
Well, then talking about big tech companies, how would you, do you propose to regulate them in any way?
The FCC doesn't have regulatory authority over them. What I have said, however, is that I do think some of those companies should be more transparent. Just as an internet service provider has to be transparent about its business practices to the FCC, every company in the internet economy should be transparent about how it does business. So that consumers and entrepreneurs can inform themselves. How is it that these searches are ordered? How is my newsfeed ordered? How does Twitter make a decision about how to present certain content and not others? So those are the kinds of things that ultimately build consumer confidence, which in some cases might be lacking.
So you mentioned the FTC. I read news reports. They say that the FTC is really understaffed and under-resourced. And even while hypothetically they can take action and all that, they may not be in the position to do so due to lack of resources. So what's your response?
That's not true at all. I mean, I testify alongside the Federal Trade Commission chairman every spring in terms of the budget. They have a similar budget to ours, a similar amount of staffing. And moreover, in terms of enforcement authority, they just settled a case against AT&T with respect to an investigation into potential throttling for tens of millions of dollars. So they are a very active cop on the beat. And I think some of the critics should pay attention to more of the facts on the ground as opposed to the more the political perceptions that might be out there.
Reading the recent court ruling, the court had decided that the FCC had overstepped its authority by prohibiting states from writing their own rules. So now several states might actually go on and, you know, have their own ISPs. So why would the FCC want to stop the state?
So in the United States, and just as I imagine might be the case in Malaysia with all the various states, internet is inherently an interstate activity. If you send a tweet to me right now or a WhatsApp message, even though we're in the same room, the chances are that that communication traverses across state boundaries. And so under U.S. law, it follows from that that only the federal government should be able to set policy in that area. So if you have the federal government setting policy, if you have 50 different states taking a bite at the regulatory apple, if you have municipalities even trying to regulate it, it quickly becomes an unworkable system of regulation. And so our argument is pretty simple. And the court recognized that, actually, is that the federal government does have authority to set policy. If any state passes a specific law that is in conflict with the federal policy, then the state policy is preempted. And so just as you can imagine, you wouldn't want Terengganu or all these different states regulating something that the government, national government of Malaysia decides should be the policy, same thing in the United States as well.
Therefore, if states wanted to have net neutrality, in reality, they would not be able to do so because it would be in conflict with the FCC's policy.
Generally speaking, if there is a state law that essentially tries to do what the previous regulations did, then it likely would be in conflict. And so that's one of the things that under the decision of the court that you referenced could be preempted under what is called conflict preemption principles.
I know you're really big on this digital divide. So when I look at your broadband progress report, I think it says here 25% of 14 million people in rural areas do not have fixed broadband service. In tribal areas, almost one-third lack access and in areas where broadband is available, 100 million Americans do not subscribe. And the report concludes that broadband is not yet deployed in a reasonable fashion. So why does the US have this problem? It's a country we put up on the pedestal.
Exactly. Part of the problem is that even though there is that perception, we are a very large and geographically and demographically diverse country. We have many rural areas with sparse populations. We have topographical challenges. So we have people who live in small mountain towns, out in deserts and places like that. And in many of these cases, there's not as strong a business proposition for companies to build this infrastructure. Building internet access is very hard. It takes a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of workforce. And in some parts of the country, that's just too difficult to do. And so part of our job at the FCC is to try to make that business case as easy as possible. Not just through modernizing our regulations, but also through some of the funding programs we've had. And I'm proud to say that over the last 2.5 years, we have made some inroads into that problem. There is still a problem. I still meet many consumers who don't have the internet access they want or need, but we are making progress slowly but surely. And that's one of the reasons why I'm also looking at encouraging new companies to enter this space, space companies, for example, or electric utilities. We want all kinds of companies to have a full opportunity to compete in this marketplace.
What are you doing to really close the gap more proactively?
In terms of digital divide? Mm-hmm. So a couple of different things. One is modernizing our regulations. Such basic things, for example, as encouraging phone companies to start investing in optical fiber infrastructure instead of propping up the copper networks that have been in the ground for decades, because every dollar that is spent on copper by definition can't be spent on next generation fiber. Also encouraging more innovation. I mentioned that under my administration, we've encouraged the first ever low Earth orbit companies to deploy thousands of satellites in space that could beam internet access to parts of the country, especially rural areas where there isn't sufficient access. And the other thing is we're pushing a lot more spectrum into the commercial marketplace. The airwaves that we all use could provide very high-speed broadband access, especially with things like 5G. And that is one of the things we've been very aggressive on as well. So we're making progress. We know there's still people on the wrong side of the digital divide, but we are moving aggressively to close that gap.
Today on The Breakfast Grill is Ajit Pai, the chairman of the Federal Communications Commission, or the FCC in the US. We were discussing net neutrality and closing the digital divide. After this, we'll ask him about the ban on Huawei.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
We're speaking with Ajit Pai, the chairman of the Federal Communications Commission, or the FCC in the US. Huawei is seeking to overturn an order passed by FCC on banning carriers in rural America from tapping the Universal Service Fund to purchase Huawei equipment. Why are you banning Huawei?
Well, so two different points here. Number one, we want to make sure that our communications networks are secure. And as part of the FCC's multi-billion dollar annual Universal Service Fund, the simple principle that we want to embrace at the FCC and across the United States government is that any dollar of federal funding that is spent by a recipient of that money across the United States should be spent on trusted vendors. We don't want them to buy equipment or services from countries or from companies that may be determined to present a national security threat. And our concern in this particular case is that especially for some of these rural providers for whom cost might be the preeminent factor, we want to make sure that they're also thinking about the security of these networks, especially as we move into a 5G environment where there are many more connected devices. The cybersecurity of any one of those devices is going to be exceptionally important. And so we didn't want to single out any company or country. We simply want to say that using a risk-based framework, we want to make sure that all recipients of our funds from the FCC act according with basic security principles.
So why are you banning the use of Huawei in rural areas and not in the urban areas?
So the Universal Service Fund typically goes to carriers that provide service in rural areas. And so that's one of the reasons why it's predominantly rural carriers that are affected by this decision.
You've said that China's law requires companies to comply with requests from China's intelligence services, and these requests cannot be disclosed to any third parties. What direct evidence do you have that Huawei has been sharing intelligence with the Chinese government?
Some of that evidence, of course, is classified. We can't discuss. But on a general level, what we can say is that the legal framework in China does not provide sufficient guarantees in some cases. I mentioned that national intelligence law. It is important that that law requires companies subject to Chinese jurisdiction to comply with requests from the intelligence services. It matters that those requests must be kept secret. It matters that there's not an independent judiciary with the rule of law that can handle a challenge to those requests. And those are types of things that create an unacceptable risk in our view.
The Chinese can compel their companies to comply with requests from China's intelligence services, but the U.S. law enforcement agencies can also compel internet providers to assist in conducting surveillance. So, and this is disclosed in Comcast's annual report. What protection do you give customers that your 5G networks will be secure?
Well, every company in the United States can challenge any request from the United States government in a court, and that court is independent of the government agency that propounded the request. Moreover, any company that wants to challenge that decision can also speak about it to members of Congress and the like. And so there's an independent legal framework that does not exist in China. And it's telling, for example, that Huawei itself is challenging a decision that the FCC made in a court in the United States. That is not something I would imagine that it would be able to do, certainly not with success, in its own country.
All that evidence will be revealed in court when this matter goes into court, full court proceedings, evidence that Huawei had been spying on American citizens. All that will have to be presented right in court, or will there be some censorship?
Well, I can't comment on the litigation itself. I haven't had a chance to review Huawei's petition yet. But generally speaking, I do believe that we made the right decision because it is basic to the way the FCC distributes the Universal Service Fund monies that it should make and can make decisions based on would be in the interest of the people of the United States. And certainly the security of the communications networks it is a core value of one of the things the FCC is trying to promote, not just the availability of those networks, but the security of those networks. And by and large, we've gotten tremendous positive feedback from across the political spectrum and across the industry for our decision.
The equipment by Huawei is said to be cheaper than others. What will happen to small carriers if the court rules that the FCC had acted appropriately in banning Huawei?
Well, one of the things that is very interesting is that the United States is taking a leading role in the deployment of next generation networks known as 5G. And the largest companies in particular that are driving American leadership from the private sector are relying on trusted vendors, companies like Ericsson and Nokia and Samsung. And these three companies are the largest suppliers of equipment and services for 5G networks in the United States. And so to me, at least, it is a false choice between security of the networks and leadership in 5G. The American example shows that you can have both if you rely on trusted vendors. And I'm confident that going forward with respect to rural carriers, one of the things we'll be discussing with them as well is the fact that they too can provide 5G services to their consumers using using equipment and services from companies that have less of a risk profile.
Well, in America, maybe this decision by FCC comes across as quite favorable to the public. But over this part of the world in Asia, people see this as just Donald Trump's political agenda to kill off Chinese players and to have that leading role in 5G. It's just like what the Americans did to the Japanese in the 1980s by forcing them to appreciate that yen. So how would you respond to that, that this is really a political thing? It's really just to kill off Chinese equipment providers like Huawei?
All I can say as the head of an independent agency that makes decisions independent of politics, my sole concern is making sure that technological progress continues using trusted vendors, and especially when 5G will be powering all kinds of economies, transportation, healthcare, agriculture, oil and gas, shipping, manufacturing, smart cities, and you name it. One of the things that is important for every single country to think about is what is the risk profile of the equipment and services that goes into these networks. And that's one of the decisions the United States makes. And one of the reasons why I'm here is to understand the thinking of Malaysians, both in the government and in the private sector. We obviously don't want to dictate our position to any other country. We simply want to understand what countries like Malaysia are thinking. Malaysia is, of course, a leader in technology in Southeast Asia. And one of the things we want to do going forward is collaborate with each other to make sure that we're learning the best practices of each country.
The FCC may be intended to be independent, but you have politicians or people with political affiliations sitting on the board. How independent are you really?
Quite. We make decisions all the time that people in the administration or on Capitol Hill might not like. And that's part of the reason why we were set up to be independent. Even though we're technically nominated by the president and confirmed by the Senate, once confirmed, we do our job. And that's one of the things I was originally appointed by President Obama, reappointed by President Trump, and I think that speaks to the fact that I approach these topics not with a political lens, but with a public interest lens. I always want to figure out what is the best thing to do according to the public interest. And I will always make that decision, even if there is political blowback. And I think the last 3 years or so of my leadership demonstrates that I'm more than willing to take heat if it is the right thing to do.
Our Prime Minister had said that the government will buy from Huawei. Are you in Malaysia to convince us not to use Huawei?
No, again, we are simply trying to express what the United States position is on these issues, to help explain how our policies have allowed the United States to leave it in 5G. While maintaining secure communications networks, and then also to understand the Malaysian position. Again, I have deep respect for the government of Malaysia's initiatives to promote technological progress throughout the region, and whether it is through some of the 5G decisions they are making, the NFCP, which is looking to, similarly as we are, to connect some of the Malaysians who are on the wrong side of the digital divide. I think there's a lot of opportunities there for collaboration. And so simply to reaffirm the ties between the United States and Malaysia when it comes to ICT issues. We are advocating for the use of trusted vendors wherever they happen to come from. And none of them come from the United States. And so one of the things that we are looking to do is simply spread the message. We can all succeed in 5G. We can improve the quality of life of all of our peoples by using trusted equipment in these 5G networks.
How critical is it for America to lead in owning 5G network equipment in order to win the 5G race?
I don't think it is. I mean, I think there are some trusted vendors that are out there. And going forward, one of the things I do think America is looking to lead on is the virtualization of some of this equipment. There are some companies, and I've met with some of them now, that are looking to essentially create a software layer, if you will, that could manage these 5G networks. And so instead of having to have equipment that is deployed at every single base station in the United States or in Malaysia or any country, you could have software that could manage them. And that is an area where the United States, both in terms of software and chips, might be, and semiconductors, that would be more competitive. And so I think as that virtualization of the 5G networks progresses, you will see American providers emerge in the time to come.
Apart from being remembered as the person who pushed for non-net neutrality, what do you really hope to be your biggest contribution to the public when your term ends in 2022? Of course, you may get renewed, but you know, if it ends in 2022, what do you hope to be remembered for?
Well, certainly I'm still in the middle of the sprint, so it's hard to stop for a second and see all that we've done. But I would hope that closing the digital divide would be seen as one of the great legacies that we've left.
Do you have a number in mind, like in terms of coverage?
Certainly as many as possible. I mean, some of the space companies that I just have described are going to be deploying starting next year. And my hope is that as many millions of Americans as possible who don't have access today will have it tomorrow. And whether it is the access itself or some of the services that that access offers, telemedicine, precision agriculture, entrepreneurship, online education, those are the types of things that even if people might not attribute it to FCC policies, I think people will come to recognize as one of the hallmarks of good government.
Thank you so much for speaking with us. Ajit Pai, Chairman of the Federal Communications Commission in the US. I'm Noel Lim on BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.